WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song!
Listen up, Slapnut. This is Jeff Jarrett.
Hey, this is Trish Stratus.
This is the undisputed future of WWE, Seth Rollins.
Hey, this is Kane from WWE.
This is TNA Superstar EC3.
Hey, this is Gail Kim. This is WWE Superstar Natalya.
Hi, this is Brie. And this is Nikki. And we're the Bella Twins.
Yes, this is Broken, not Haughty.
The greatest man that ever lived always likes a good rack. And you're listening to the greatest rack.
Stratisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
I heard y'all wanted to hear a bedtime story.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
In this moment in time right now, this very second, I can truly say that I have the whole damn world in my head.
With your host,
they've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
And her producer, Sir Rocket.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
This right here means I'm the champ that runs the camp.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
I knew you, dumb.
And this is going to be simply glorious.
Everyone, welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at Wrestling Figure Photography. Follow the journey today at Instagram.com/MBG1211. And a huge shout out to everybody listening to us over at Gerwick.net, WildTalkRadio.com, and RackRadioShow.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you get a quick second, check out the fine folks over at FightBooth.com. They post amazing articles every day, and you should totally go read them. But not during the show, because, well, we have a super stacked lineup, and I'm going to be bringing to you because I'm your host, Lindsay Ward, and I'm joined, as always, by my ever-faithful producer slash co-host slash handyman, Sir Rockin.
Hi, everybody. You can interact with us live on the Twitter, at Rack Radio Show, at Wild Talk Radio, at Lindsay Ward. Come to Gerwick.net. Come to RackRadioShow.com or WildTalkRadio.com and interact with us in our interactive chat room, or you can send me random Skype messages like someone named Flames Forums just did.
Hi!
There's your hi.
There was a wave involved with that. You know what? You know what I realize every time we play that intro to the show? That I always have been meaning to make like a logo for Taker's Magical Art of Puppetry School or whatever it's supposed to be. And I always say, like, every week when we play the show and we get to that point in the intro, it's like, damn, I forgot to do that. And I'm like, I'm going to do that this week. And I always forget. Like, every week. It's a bit.
There you
nobody
go.
Cares because, you know, nobody watched the movie but us and five-year-olds. But
hey, it was an awesome movie.
It's The Undertaker talking about puppets. Come on.
Make Taker puppet logo. Okay.
You just sent that to work, didn't you?
Yep.
I hate you.
Anyway, here we are. We're live. You can interact with us. As I mentioned, we got a big show planned for you tonight, including a very special interview.
Yes, we are going to be joined later by the one, the only, one of our favorite guests ever, Brian Shields. He's here to talk to us all about his brand new book, Second Nature, which is a biography about Rick and Charlotte Flair. It's the first of its kind, and he has some pretty amazing things to say about it and them, so you want to tune in later as he talks all about it. I'm excited, y'all should be too, because Brian's fabulous.
Brian is awesome. Brian is a talker. We talk a lot of things, including the Mae Young Classic, which we're going to talk about here in a few minutes with all of you. And we're going to dive deep into the book, and you're going to learn some things that you did not know about the Nature Boy and Charlotte Flair. So that's coming up at the back end of our show.
And we'll tell you also how you could, you know, maybe win something related to that book.
But you
hint, wink, wink.
But you have to listen to the interview to find out all about it.
And it's really long. I'm sorry. I'm sorry in advance. It's really long because Brian's a talker. But we love Brian.
Yes.
We love Brian.
So that is still to come in the show.
So I say we don't waste any more time and we dive right into the news brought to our friends over at Gerwick.net and FightBoot.com. And well, we have a short news segment this week. Yay! So you know what? Let's hit it. Injury roundup.
Bones breaking. Backs cracking. Shoulder snapping. It's this week's injury roundup.
I love it when WWE goes overseas because, like, there's no news. It's awesome. Not usually, but, you know, in this case, because we want everybody to hear Brian Shields. It's an awesome thing. Anyway, injury roundup. We have a couple updates for you. First one is the Big Show, where he went out with a supposed hip injury. It was reported the Big Show did have successful hip surgery this past week.
No, he will have hip surgery.
Or he will.
He will, because it was delayed because of the hurricane. So he'll have hip surgery on September 29th, but yes, he is out with a hip injury. As this is where the sounder would play if it was queued up correctly. Here we go.
Hashtag blame Brent.
Professionalism. Live radio, y'all. Live radio.
The volume button.
It's always key. Up next, we have Mick Foley, who had... He did have successful knee surgery, yes?
Yes.
Yes. So he is convalescing at home and is doing much better.
Hashtag blame Brent.
So feel better, Mick.
He had his knee replaced because, you know, reasons. Because, you know, 30-plus years in pro wrestling, so... First the hip, then the knee, so he's probably on the phone to The Undertaker.
Oh,
so this is what it feels like to get your knee replaced.
I have little doubt Taker hasn't figured that one out yet. Because...
Reasons.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on, just a quick story that we forgot to cover on the Raw Post Show, which you can hear every Monday night after Monday Night Raw right here on WildTalkRadio.com. Ding! And that is that the Empress of Tomorrow started her teases to come to Monday Night Raw. That's right. The negotiations have completed and it was announced Asuka is headed to Raw. I'm excited for this.
Okay. I'm excited she's coming up to the main roster. But I'm very conflicted because it's Monday Night Raw. And you look at the landscape on SmackDown. You got Charlotte. You got Becky. You got Naomi. You got Natalya. And you go, those are some cool matches. But also the pace of the show, and it's more of the wrestling show, quote unquote. And you just feel like she wouldn't get so lost in the shuffle on SmackDown if she would on Raw. That's just me. It's cool she's going to Raw, but I think she would have been better off going to SmackDown to start. But Raw kind of needs her too.
Raw really does kind of need her because they need that secondary, very strong character. Because you look at sort of the women's roster on Raw, and you have strong personalities and strong characters, but not like Asuka. And she's someone that she can come in and you can have her absolutely dominate the women's division and sort of put it back on the map.
You could, but at the same time, there's not a lot of depth on that roster, which is why you need her, but at the same time, it's why it hurts being on that brand.
But she can build the depth. I mean, as more people start to come up, you can start to shuffle people around. You can also have another superstar shakeup. I imagine one's coming probably in the next 3 to 6 months. I would argue, maybe, possibly, we'll have to see, because they don't seem to be going a full year on the shakeups. They seem to be doing them about every 9 months.
I mean,
so
yeah, but you got Bayley, who's coming back from an injury. You got Sasha, you got Alexa, you got Nia as your top 3 and 4. And then there's Mickey hanging around, who they've sort of dropped the ball with when she came over to Monday Night Raw. She's sort of been a background player with Dana Brooke, which is amazing that Mickey's not being featured more often than she is. And it's like, maybe you can reinvent Mickey, have her go and face Asuka like they did 1 year ago for a takeover. Maybe that's the start of the plan? I'm not really sure.
I would be fine with that.
Because you can't bring Asuka up and go, championship. Because I think that's rushing it, you know?
No, I think you need to build to her getting that title, especially since you've got it on Alexa Bliss right now, and you need to build to that match between Asuka and Alexa. And so you could have her go through your Summer Rae's, your Emma's, I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, you have her go through Dana Brooke, some of those, the lower card, lower end girls, and she works her way up. You could reignite the Asuka Nia Jax feud. You could reignite Asuka and Bayley, because let's not forget that Bayley was the start of the undefeated reign.
It was, and if you remember back, Asuka's first feud was Emma and Dana.
Yeah. So you can sort of repeat her entrance into NXT on the main roster and try and rebuild that. And as long as you have Asuka be as dominant as what she was in NXT, I think it will be okay.
And that's the key. She needs to be as dominant as she was, which is harder to do, I say, on Monday Night Raw, unless you're coming in with squash matches like they did with Nia, which is okay to start. But you need to get her into a program and meaningful stuff within 6 weeks of her doing there. Not the title, but just give her direction right away.
Well, the big story that they're going to tell is, you know, who can defeat her? Who can beat Asuka? Who can hang that first loss on her? Because let's not forget, she's coming in undefeated. She has a streak, and we all know how WWE loves to break streaks.
Imagine if Charlotte still had her pay-per-view streak, and Asuka, awesome. And Asuka coming up with her streak.
It could be streak versus streak.
Could have been.
They could be streaking together. But really? Nothing? Nothing. Crickets. Nothing.
What do you want me to say?
You set me up for that.
Like you set me up earlier. Anyway, moving on, he says. No, they could do a lot of stuff with her, and it could be really cool. I hope they have a plan. I hope that this is not, oh, hey, we're bringing her up to bring her up. I hope it's, we have a plan.
Well, I think they're bringing her up to bring her up, because honestly, what else is there for her to do in NXT? You either have to give her that first loss in NXT, or she has to leave. I mean, that was the point. They were two. She's faced everybody in the women's division at least twice. She's beaten them all at least twice. So there's no one else really for her to face.
Oh, no, it's good to bring her up. I'm just saying, just don't bring her up to bring her up. I mean, bring her up with a purpose.
I feel like you could start to build her on Monday Night Raw, and then you do a shakeup and you move her over to SmackDown. And you sort of save, like, Asuka and Bayley and Asuka and Nia and those kinds of things for later on down the road, and you go to Becky and Asuka, because I don't know if they ever faced.
Becky and Asuka, no. I don't. Becky was gone by the time Asuka got there.
Natty and Asuka have never gone.
Like I said, there's more matchups there than we've seen already on SmackDown.
But you have her make that initial splash on SmackDown on Raw, and you build her up, and then it's like you can build her up into a star and do a shake-up. Because again, we all know one is coming where she goes over to SmackDown, and then she can be a star on SmackDown.
LeMans in chat room goes, honestly, I think I should have Ember beat her. No. You should not have beaten her with Ember, because Ember was not ready for that. Because once it's like the streak, it's like the Undertaker. The person getting it needs to have earned it and be able to carry it. Ember couldn't carry that. Because the way they booked down NXT, they're going to have Ember lose at some point, and it just wouldn't work.
I think Ember could have carried it, and it's something of if Asuka was not going to the main roster, like if Asuka was at the end of her contract and she was going to go back to Japan, I can absolutely, yes, 100% see her losing, and that's completely fine. But to end a streak like that, where she's beaten literally everybody on a loss, even if it is to Ember, would hurt her going up to the main roster. And right now they want her stock to be as high as they can possibly get it. So I think taking the title off of her because of an injury and sending her up is probably your best case scenario with that. Because they were in a no-win situation. It's like she either goes up with the title, they strip her of the title, or she loses. So the collarbone, as horrible as it sounds, was a happy accident.
It was a very happy accident, yeah. But yeah, that's the story with Asuka, that she's on the road to the main roster, and we will see where it goes from there. It's 10-9 on a field goal.
This is an exciting game, y'all.
Texas.
Houston versus Cincy.
I mean, it's a battle.
It's a battle.
It's a Thursday night battle.
That's why
it's only airing on the NFL Network.
Moving on. From Asuka to some other ladies, some fantastic ladies who we've been following for the last few weeks. That's right, y'all. It's time for the Mae Young Classic.
We don't have a fancy bumper for Mania Classic.
Well, you said we had a new fancy bumper.
I said for SmackDown.
Okay. Remember earlier?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, not everything.
Mae Young Classic time, everybody. The finals were held on the WWE Network this past Tuesday night. So, yeah, the finals were Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane. First off, the presentation of the entire thing overall that night was really well done.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I liked they brought in Lillian for this. They made it have a really big UFC fight feel. It was important. They had a red carpet where they had, like, the Stars of GLOW. They had all the wrestlers. They had Hunter and Stephanie McMahon there. They had, everybody was there.
Ronda was there.
All four Horsemen women were there, but Ronda was there.
Ronda was there, yeah. Because she's always the key. But yeah, they were all there. And I liked, you had Summer Rae there, you had Asuka, you had the WWE Horsewomen minus Sanity, Sasha. So what happened? You see Twitter and you go, huh, that's a word. Anyway, Sasha was overseas with the Raw crew because they were in New Zealand for house shows.
I feel like they could have like kept her over for the Mae Young Classic and then sent her.
They could have, but, you know, timing always doesn't work, especially with her. Because wasn't she there in New Zealand last time? Yeah,
she was doing press.
She was doing press. See, she couldn't. Because she did press to be there at those shows at the same time.
I know, but still, it's like, come on.
She got the short straw on the whole deal. That's the way that one went. So you had this entire Mae Young Classic. 32 women, boiled down to Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler. Name slipped my mind. So, they went out there, they had a good match on Tuesday night. And what I liked about the match, first off, was just Shayna Baszler's style really works.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is very inexperienced. And you can see it at times, where she is inexperienced. But at the same time, she has this different feel to her that no one else on that roster has.
No.
Because she's legitimate. She looks like a legitimate athlete who can kick your ass.
And she didn't pull her kicks as much this time, which was good. Her kicks looked a lot more vicious in this match than they did throughout the whole entire Mae Young tournament. So I don't know if it's Kairi just told her to go for it, or if Shane has kind of been working on her kicks to make them look less weak. I'm not entirely sure, but her kicks looked a lot better in this match than they had previously. I liked that for the first time, but not for the first time with Shayna, we finally saw her start to tell a story. Like, she did it with Mercedes to a certain extent. Like, they told a very nice story, but it's like Shayna and Kairi really did a nice job with each other, where they were toying with each other. They're messing with each other. They felt each other out. It's like, all right, I'm gonna do this and see what you do. All right, you're gonna do that and you're gonna see what I'm gonna do, kind of thing, where they took their time and they built a really beautiful match with each other. Because it's like, you look at the numbers and you look at Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane, it's like, Shayna should win handily. Like, everything about this match pointed to Shayna Baszler winning. It's in Vegas. The four horsewomen are there. They're giving it this big fight, UFC-type feel. You know, she's got probably 4 inches and
50 pounds. Yeah, about easy 50 pounds.
On Kairi Sane. So, you know, it's like, and she's got the MMA background. So, like, everything indicates that she should be able to beat Kairi Sane. Like, everything.
Because, let's be honest, Kairi Sane, as good as she is, she's like 100 pounds soaking wet.
Yeah.
She's tiny.
She's itty bitty. She's adorable. She's an itty bitty adorable fury.
But
she's itty bitty.
In a legitimate fight, she would kill her. Legit. Yeah. But to Kairi Sane's credit, or Kairi Sane, they say it two different ways. It's Kairi Sane. She knows how to work, and she knows how to put herself in a position where she can put on the best performance she knows how to do.
And
that's what we saw here.
Yeah, sorry. She's really good at using her size. Like, you hear that a lot about the big guys, but I think the little people, you know, the smaller women, the smaller men, don't get enough credit for that, where it's like they understand how to use their size and their bodies for the best outcome. And Kairi Sane really did that here for Shayna Baszler. I mean, she made her look like $1 million. The just where Shayna was all on offense for initially, and she's just beating up Carrie, and you're just kind of waiting for Carrie to do it, to, like, you know, kick in and start to fight back. But it's like, you know, she sold every hit, every kick, every, you know, submission hold. There were a lot of false finishes, a lot of, you know, reversals between the two. I just really liked how they did that.
And what you saw in this one was it was a fighter versus a wrestler slash sports entertainer, because there's moments where Carrie went into sports entertainer mode, the pirate that she is, and you saw the difference of their style. It worked. It was a nice contrast of styles, but you could see the difference of how they were brought up. One's brought up as a Japanese wrestler with the entertainment side to it, and then you have Shayna Baszler, who's not used to, and this is what she, one thing she has to learn how to do, is show the emotion and show that side of her. Because in UFC, you're taught not to show any emotion. You're taught to be straightforward and not show it, because that shows weakness to your opponent.
And I think she'll get there. She was kind of doing it a little bit in this match. She was sort of toying with Carrie a lot. So, and Shayna got very cocky and very confident, and that showed. So they're working on her with her emoting. I think she could get there. Shayna kind of reminds me of what, basically, I look at her and I see what Baron Corbin was supposed to be, almost. And that's not a shot at him, because he does something completely different than her, but it's like, when I look at her, that's what I see. Is like this female, just Baron Corbin, who's a badass, who's a loner, who doesn't care. I mean, she's very, very nonchalant in her attitude. And just, it's like, you look at her and it's like, yeah, that's who Baron Corbin needs to be.
She is an edge like he has, and that's something, you know, it just has to be. So it's like, yeah, I could see that. I could see the comparison.
And I hate to compare her to anybody on the roster, but it's just like every time I look at her, I think of Baron Corbin. I don't know why, but, you know, other than it's the edge and it's the similar qualities. But yeah, it's like I look at Shayna Baszler and it's like, yep, Baron Corbin right there. Yep, there he is.
So like, yeah, if she shows able to drive that personality, show some real emotion, she could be a real star. She needs a little bit more work, a little bit more seasoning, but that's okay.
But she signed to the Performance Center, and they'll work with her on that. The point is that she's very technically sound. She can go, she knows how to sell.
She's a legitimate athlete, legitimate fighter.
Yeah.
And you don't have that. A lot of them are wrestlers. This is a fighter. It's totally different. We've mentioned this a few times already, talking about the Mae Young Classic here on the rack, where you look down at NXT, Sonya Deville, who has an MMA background, but is trying to mix MMA and wrestling together, and is sort of getting it, but not there yet. She has a lot of seasoning where she needs to go. But you look at Shayna Baszler, and she has it. She knows the deal. She's been wrestling on the independents and what have you, so she has that experience, and it's growing. I hope they don't take what she knows and sort of say, hey, do all of this. Just make her stronger in the areas that she needs to be, that she's already doing.
Yeah, and I mean, she's got the showmanship, she's got all that in her that's natural from being in UFC, where it's like after the fight is over, you showboat and everything else, so she's got that in her. Again, Shayna is polishing, and she'll get that. She'll get that in the Performance Center, because like we said, she's signed. So they will work with her. They will make sure that they polish her up into something really amazing, because it's all there. I mean, we saw it very clearly Tuesday night. It's all there.
Oh, it is all there. I did like, throughout the match, they worked on the elbow.
Yes.
There were points where she was trying to bend that arm. Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, and you're like, ow, it's not meant to bend that way.
No, those bending of the arm were not meant to bend that way. But yeah, as you saw throughout the match, it just sort of, like, the tide shifted, went, okay, it's go all Shayna, 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 and then it's like, ooh, Kari said it's going to win. You just saw it shift.
Kari got mad.
She got mad. Those slaps she would just put on, she just wouldn't let up. Man, I think she laid, like, 30 slaps on her.
At least.
It's like, bang, 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 bang. I'm just going to slap the crap out of you because I'm tired of being beaten up by you. And that's what it was in that match. And it was awesome to see. The finish was nice. They were battling up on the top rope. Shannon was going for the suplex. Got blocked off. And Kari was able to finally hit the big time elbow for the win. I thought Lita and JR did good on commentary. It was better. I think the live performance was better than all the stuff they were doing pre-taped, because it felt pre-taped. For the commentary, it felt like they were reading a script rather than telling the story. And I thought the announcers did a better job telling the story in this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So I thought the announcers were good. I thought Renee Young hosting the event was good at the beginning.
I thought the whole thing was really, really well done, because you could see what they were going for in the Performance Center. Or I should say the Performance Center in Full Sail, where they were taking the house lights down and they just had it spotted on the ring. It's like when you took that into a larger arena, it looked way better than what it did at Full Sail. But the one thing that I really loved is how important this was. How important this felt. Like I said, it had a big match feel. There was no title on the line, but it was, we are going to crown the very first Mae Young Classic winner. There was a red carpet. You had celebrities there. You had, you know, probably 10, 15,000 people in the audience. Granted, they were there for SmackDown, but they were still there.
They were still there.
You had Hunter there. You had Stephanie there. You had Vince there.
Well, you sort of had Vince there.
Vince was there.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to Vince in a bit.
We'll get to Vince in a bit. Vince was in the back end stitched up. Anyway, but you had all the higher-ups. You had the muckety-mucks there. It was important to them. You could tell it was important. It felt important. It was a big deal. Because, again, this was history. WWE has never done anything like this before, because they've never put the faith in the women like they have until this tournament. And it's paid dividends for them, because this tournament has been hugely successful for them, just based on the response alone.
Oh,
so
without question.
Hmm?
Without question, it's been highly successful.
So it's like to me, it feels like they gave it the finale that it deserved. Rather than, you know, it's like, yeah, they could have done what they did with the UK tournament. They could have done it from Full Sail. Or not Full Sail.
Overseas, it's like the Cruiserweight Classic, which it did from Full Sail.
That's right. Sorry, that's the one. I get them confused. Yeah, I mean, you could have just done it from Full Sail and pre-taped it, and that would have been it. You could have done what you did for the UK title, where it's like, yeah, you know, you just go over there, you do it, and that's it. This, you actually took it to TV. You actually had a huge audience there. You did everything that you did for it. They put out the money for it. They had the announcers. They had, I mean, it felt special.
It did feel special. And now here's a question I pose. Was the binge watch format a better format than the Cruiserweight Classic format?
Yes. 100% yes. I liked that they released it in the 4-episode interval, because it's, okay, you can sit down and you can watch 4 episodes of the Mae Young Classic in one shot if you want, or you can break it up over time. And then it's like, they announce next week on this day, the next 4 come out. And so on.
My only thing would have been, I would have split it up maybe into 3s.
I like the 4s better.
Just to give it one more week. Just to give people more talk about it. I'm not saying like 4 weeks or whatever. I would have done split it up a little bit, just to stretch it a tiny bit to a third week. Just to give it a bigger build. Just to give it a bigger build. I felt it was a little rushed in 2 weeks. Especially when it was sitting in a can for a month. That was my biggest complaint. It's like, we were all hyped for it at end of July.
Mm-hmm.
And then it took us a month to see it.
But that's okay, because the anticipation was there.
It was and it wasn't. I think some of it got lost in between. I think a quicker turnaround would help it a little bit going forward. But now we've seen 3 different styles. We've seen a pre-taped tournament in Full Sail shown weekly. With a live finale. We've now had a binge-watching format of a tournament, and we also had a weekend tournament, a 2-day weekend live tournament. I don't think the weekend live tournament is the best idea. I think it's a little too much and a little too rush.
A little bit, yeah.
While the weekly format is good, I like the binge-watch format a little bit better, but I would want a quicker turnaround going forward. Those are a couple of things I would suggest on it. I hope they do a second Mae Young Classic.
I hope so as well.
Because it feels like they could do it and give us different talent or showcase other talent. You could bring some other talent back. In fact, what you could do...
Bring back Tessa Blanchard.
You could bring back some of them, but it would be cool to see you take some of the best... I know they wouldn't do it, but you could take a couple of the main roster girls and put them in the tournament.
Yeah.
and sort of do it in that fashion. So you don't have to find 32 different people. And yes, it would be predictable that WWE people would go over, but you don't have to be predictable. You can have an upstart get a win over somebody, because then it makes them a name. You sign them. Here you go. Here's a made story coming out of it.
I feel like, yeah, I mean, it's like you don't have to have the signed talent go over. If anything, it's like you put the signed talent, obviously, in the first round, and you can have one or two of them lose, because I think that would help with the first round, because that was obviously the hardest thing to watch, and that's why I'm kind of against splitting it up into threes, just because the first round was kind of one of those things where it was good, but you obviously could tell that they had doubled the number of girls that they had to extend out the tournament, so the matches really didn't get down to business necessarily until the second round, or even the third. So it's like, yeah.
But the reason I would say stretch it out is you also stretch out the taping days. Instead of trying to get this all done in, what, a day? 2 days, like they did?
2 days.
Give it a couple more extra days. That way you give us longer matches early on.
Yeah, but that's a cost thing, because you're paying all these girls to come in, you're paying the crew to come in, you're paying full sail for the building. So I see why they do it in 2 days. It's because we have to get it done. We only have the building for so long, we only have the girls for so long. And because, I mean, look at it. They're probably covering hotel. They're probably covering rides, meals to a certain extent. Like, they're taking care of 32 women, essentially, to wrestle in this tournament. So just the cost expenditure alone, it's like, yeah, I can see why you would do it over 2 days.
Oh, I can see it completely. But, you know, being selfish and everything, I would want to, you know, this is what hell I would change it and make things differently for the next go round. I understand exactly why they did it. How they did it and all that. I get it all, but it's like, selfishly, it's like, there were a couple matches in this tournament where you went, that could have been better as you give them double the time.
Yeah, like Mercedes and Shayna should have had more time, but it was good. There were a few others. It's like, I kind of wanted to see more of Tessa and Kairi Sane.
Yeah, they only had like a few minutes. It's like, give them 15, a long 15 minutes and like, see what they could put on. It's like, there were just some matches, not every match needed to be longer, but there were a few matches where it's like, you could have seen more and gotten more out of it.
Toni Storm and Piper Niven.
That was one of them, but I think they got a good amount of time.
They got a good amount of time, but I feel like it needed like 10 more minutes.
Could have been 5-10 more minutes. And it appears by them, you even had the girls from there as well in the crowd. You had Piper, you had Mercedes, you had Candice LeRae, and there was one other one. There were four of them. I only remember three. Can't remember the fourth. Sorry to the fourth. Can't remember who you were.
Was it Gabby?
May have been. I can't remember who it was.
I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, it's like Piper. I will say this, that Piper Niven and Toni Storm in the audience together were absolutely adorable. They're such good wifeies to each other.
Toni Storm in her pimp coat.
Toni Storm in her pink coat. And damn, she was rocking that thing.
Yes, she was. Couple more things about the Mae Young Classic. By the way, still to come, Brian Shields, talking all things second nature, and we'll tell you how you can win a copy of the book coming up during the interview. Now, this is presented by Gerwick.net and Wrestling Figure Photography. So, one thing we learned from the red carpet, or right before the red carpet on Facebook Live with Stephen McMahon, is there's a new action figure, a new doll that has been created.
Oh my god.
The 12-inch Mae Young doll.
I want it!
That is really cool how they got that done for this tournament. That is really, really cool. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was that. And the other thing that did not happen was the big horsewomen versus horsewoman confrontation. Because I don't think all the horsewomen for Ronda for the UFC side were there either. I think it was only three of them.
Maybe? But it's like, you can't really run it if Sasha's not there.
Right, you couldn't run the angle if Sasha's there. Plus, they wanted to give the big spotlight to Kairi Sane at the end with the flowers and the trophy and everything like that. By the way, that trophy is huge, and I don't know how Kairi Sane will ever hold it.
It's bigger than her.
It's bigger than her. It will go in her house somewhere going, ooh, that's pretty.
No, it's probably they're going to put their name on it. Her name on it, and they'll take it back to the performance center, and they'll have it in the performance center, like the Dusty Trophy.
That's true. They'll just put it there, display it, because it's kind of huge.
And she'll probably get like a plaque or something.
Probably.
Because, I mean, honestly, they're not going to ship that thing back to Japan. They're just not going to do it.
Oh, yeah, they have to go back to Japan. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, it was announced on ESPN.com that that Kairi Sane is now one of the women who will be a part of the upcoming NXT Women's Championship match at NXT TakeOver Houston. That's pretty cool.
I'm on board for this. I'm absolutely on board for this. I was kind of like half expecting them to just give her the title at the end of the classic.
I think many people were because you've learned to expect that because the UK got a title. The Cruiserweight title was announced. This was the first one without a title.
And I'm okay with it not having a title, but it's like you have the vacated women's championship, and it's like it would have been cool to have them hand Kairi Sane the title, and now she's the lady that everybody's gunning for in NXT because she's the champion. Mm-hmm. And it's, can she live up to Asuka's reign? Because that's going to be every champion now until Asuka's reign is broken, if it's ever broken. Can you live up to that undefeated streak? Can you live up to the over a year and a half title reign that was Asuka?
It's a big question, a big decision.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if she can live up to the hype.
We'll see, but yeah. If you guys haven't seen it, go check out the Mae Young Classic Finals, and if you haven't watched any of the tournament at all, go check it out. I will tell you this, we do talk about the Mae Young Classic with Brian Shields, who we're talking to later in the show, and he gives us his insight on the matches, and, well, who he likes.
And he made a prediction. Was he right? Was he wrong?
We'll have to see.
You gotta listen to find out.
But I say we take our first break of the evening. What do you think?
I think that's a good idea.
So when we come back, we are doing all your favorites, Tweet of the Week, SmackDown, and NXT, and like I said, later in the show, Brian Shields. You don't want to miss it, so you're listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we'll be right back.
Can't catch a WTR program live? Well, we've got three easy ways for you to listen whenever you want. First, listen to the Wild Talk Radio Network on iTunes. Just head over to iTunes and search for Wild Talk Radio Network and subscribe to our feed. Secondly, download the Stitcher Radio app and search for Wild Talk Radio Network. And finally, just visit the archive section right here at wildtalkradio.com. And you can download every single episode of all your favorite programs. Best of all, it's free. Keep up to date and spread the word to your friends on how you can be part of the Wild Talk Radio Network listening experience.
Every Monday night, get caught up with everything that happens on Monday Night Raw with the Raw Post Show.
Suplex City, bitch!
From the big returns...
Maybe I have one more ass-kicking left in. I thought to myself, maybe I have one badass spear left in me. Then I thought to myself, maybe I have one last devastating jackhammer in me. So, Brock Lesnar, not only does that mean that you're next, but most importantly, it means... Brock Lesnar, you're last!
To the shocking moment.
First off, thank you so much for that. Yeah, what's up, Detroit?
And the moments that leave you speechless.
You know, Chris, if you're gonna put something on that list, why don't you start with that terrible scarf of yours? I mean, while I'm looking at you, you can add those rinky-dink tattoos on there, your tacky little haircut, your creepy mustache, and how about those trunks, Sparkle Crotch?
What?
Sparkle Crotch. They're sparkly. Rhinestones all over the place. Sparkle Crotch. Go ahead, get it on the list, write it down. Sparkle Crotch.
I'm going to say this one time. I am not Sparkle Crotch!
It's the Raw Post Show, Monday nights, live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Tuesday night, step inside the virtual realm with WTR Sims.
It's boots to asses time!
Watch as your favorite WTR personalities battle it out to find out which one truly is the best.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man!
Watch it live Tuesday nights, 11:30 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/rackradioshow or on demand at youtube.com/rackradioshow. Tuesday nights will never be the same again with WTR Sims.
Who is the greatest hockey player of all time? CB Radio has decided.
Butchering some names, Frank Nyberg versus Joe Newwensiken. Newwendik.
I'm going to go with Newendike.
Yes,
Newendike. Wow. That is not what it looks like. Sweeney Schneider versus Matt Schmidt.
It's Milt, not Matt.
Whatever. I figured that was going to help out Team Chat. Finally, someone who has a real name. Brad Park against Mark Messier.
Messier.
What the
Messier.
Hell is
that? Messier. Yeah. Yeah. Hang this
fucking
lynch him. Get a rope.
He has a goddamn R at the end. Screw you.
I can only wait till he gets to that Wayne Gretzky guy.
Guy Lafleur versus Lauren Chatbot. You added a T. Yes, I did. On purpose. Brett Hull versus Ray Bourque.
Bjork? Ray fucking Finkel.
Bjork. Okay, whatever.
Just think of the Swedish chef.
Fischler versus Wayne Gretzky.
Gretzky. I'll be the Gretzky guy.
Way to play into it, Jobber. Way to play into it.
Pavel.
Oh, Bure? God.
Wait. Pavel. Bure? What? How do they have his mouth?
Bure.
Pavel Bure.
Bure. Okay.
Oh, my
fuck
God.
French. Jerome Ignilia.
Aginla.
What?
Aginla.
Aginla? Versus Joe Sakic. That's where I was going to go originally, but I figured it was going to be pronounced differently than I was expecting.
Jerome Aginla, one of the all-time greatest Calgary Flames players of all time.
Okay, Sakic. So I'm going to go with Joe.
Alright, Joe Sakic on. I can feel the hatred now for that last one.
You're all idiots.
It's the Greater Than Great Debate, heard Saturday night, midnight-ish Eastern on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Hey everyone,
everyone. This is Angelina Love, your six-time knockout champion and the Sacred Seductress, and you are doing the right thing because you are listening to the Rack Radio Show.
Welcome back to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to our friends over at Wrestling Figure Photography. Follow the journey today at Instagram.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over at WildTalkRadio.com, Gerwick.net, or RackRadioShow.com, thank you so much for tuning in. We get greatly appreciate it. If you could, you know, check out the fine folks over at FightBoot.com when you get a second, we'd greatly appreciate that as well, because we love FightBoot.com. They're awesome. And well, you know what else is awesome? We also have Brian Shields later in the show. He's talking about his brand new book, Second Nature. So you don't want to miss that. It features the Flares. That's right. Flares, plural, if I could speak. It's the first of its kind. So you don't want to miss that either. But, well, speaking of don't miss, we're going to do Tweet of the Week.
Well, I used to be the kind of person spending time on MySpace until the spammers ended up taking over my place, and I was so bitter until I found Twitter. Ooh, a place where you can go ahead and write what you're feeling. 140 characters or less is what you're giving. My addiction starts to climb. I go to refresh my timeline, 'cause I won't stop tweeting. No more, no more. It cannot wait, I'm sure.
Because it's not football season without it. Seth Rollins, I hate football.
Yep.
It's officially football season, y'all.
Yep.
Liv Morgan and Tyler Bate have been having quite a few little interludes with each other. It's adorable. So she starts out by tweeting him, "I like your shirt." And he responds by saying, "I like your face." And then he, a few days later, comes back to her and says, "I like your glasses," in reference to a selfie she put out. And she goes, "I like your face." Yeah, y'all are being real smooth about this. Let me just, you know, say that now.
Yep.
Tyler, just slide right onto her DMs there, buddy. You got her.
I think they're wide open for her.
I think they're wide open, dude. Go for it. You got a wing. You've got two wingmen if you need it.
Just keep going. Just keep going.
Glenn Joseph, for the love of all that looks like it's written and come, don't let this happen on Sunday. At Obey Brooks and at Kid Lycos. And it's a gif of Trent Seven and Glenn Joseph, with Trent Seven giving this shit-eating grin and a thumbs up as he's holding the Progress Wrestling Tag Team Champions, which, you know, Glenn Joseph was hoping they would lose. And Glenn Joseph's just standing there all ashamed. Like, damn it. Thankfully that didn't happen. Hashtag spoilers. Liv Morgan! Me knowing that I'm single and nobody is cheating on me, and it's a gif of her drinking water. 'Cause shots fired?
They were fired, yes.
Guys, I've got a great hook for a feud between Kevin and Finn, and it's a gif of Kevin saying, "I hate Legos." To which Kevin replies, "My stance on this has changed. Owen is now old enough to take care of them properly. Finn gives him Legos all the time, actually." So note to self, we can give Kevin Owens' son Legos all the time.
All Legos, all the time.
Hey, that's all I got.
Not SportsCenter breaking. Now that Ezekiel Elliott's suspension was blocked, Roger Goodell is suspending Tom Brady 16 games because, that's why. Not Bill Walton. Interception Matthew Stafford, if you're counting, that's $135 million per interception. Pro Football Talk. Tony Romo is doing well, but his voice is cracking more than Peter Brady's when he was going through the, quote-unquote, time to change. Yes, folks. It is now football season. We took a Tony Romo shot. And he doesn't even play football.
You should totally have, like, a sounder for the Tony Romo shots.
Maybe we'll get one. Matt Men Podcast. Does John Cena's theme start out with a black dude yelling, "Hafa-joo!" or "Yapa-noo!" The world may never know.
John, honey, we need to clear this up.
Skip Bayless tweeted, "The Eagles gave Doug Peterson a Gatorade bath for beating Kirk Cousins in game one on a bad call. All you need to know." Richard Deitch goes, "Paw Patrol's pup save runway beat the Bayless-led undisputed in viewers 1.057 million to 102,000 on September 1st. All you need to know." That's what happens when you take a shot. You get one taken right back at you. Someone named Cat Waters tweets, "Zelina Vega, you should do a video game session with Billy Kay and film it. That would be cool and funny." She goes, "You down, Billy Kay?" And Billy Kay was sort of, you know, into it. And then Payne Royce jumps in. No, she's not down. Don't talk to her. And then she tweets, Hey, Andrade, your chick Loca. Zelina goes, "Or you're just mad because I added you for sliding in Andrade's DMs? Watch yourself, because I will make you in the Sims game just to smack you." Getting real on the Twitters.
Hey, now, y'all. Calm down.
Payne Royce goes, "Or you mad because he replied?"
Ooh!
And then she posted a gif of trying to snatch another girl that's head bald. Because reason. And then Zelina goes, "Haha, what, Payne Royce? Afraid me and your iconic partner have more in common?" She said, "I can sit with you guys. Hashtag on Fridays we wear pink."
Nice! Nice. Great reference.
Billy Kay, like I said, approved this. She said challenge accepted. But Payne Royce has to approve the decision first.
Well, of course she does. She's her girlfriend.
Someone named Martin goes, "LOL, Billy Kay going through Payne Royce's closet. Poor Payne. Hashtag cargo pants." Payne goes, "I love those cargo pants. I've had them for 7 years. Billy Kay, "I like them when they fit me," was a quote. That was like 10 years ago. And then they talk about needing and can't live without each other on the Twitters.
Because they're dating. Because
they're dating.
They're dating. I'm tired of this girl pals doing girl pal stuff things. Just admit that they're dating, y'all. Please. Please. It would be so much easier.
So, I tweeted, "Did Shawn Michaels switch to Burger King or Chick-fil-A? I wonder what McDonald's will have to do to win him back," as there's a picture floating around that on the interwebs. "We are currently out of boy toys. Sorry for your inconvenience," says McDonald's. Wit replied, "He switched to Chick-fil-A because that's the Lord's chicken."
Not a lie.
John Cena, so iPhone X about face ID, what do I do? Because you can't see him?
Okay, I have to admit. That was well good. That was well done.
Daniel Bryan did a Q&A waiting for a flight. "Any fond memories of using Tout back in the day?" I still use Tout. It's the best form of social media.
Bryan trying to bring Tout back, one person at a time.
What's your reaction to Fight Owens' fight and his actions tonight? "Sweet headbutt, poor decision." And he thanked everyone for helping him kill some time. Q&A officially sponsored by Tout. He then replied to himself, "I should probably clarify, that was a blatant lie."
Bless Brian. So, bless him so much.
This new Apple iPhone thing says you can pay with your face. So CPUK goes, "Is Apple threatening me?" Maybe.
Could be.
Maybe. Someone named Lowe goes, PSA, "The new iPhone costs $999. The entire Cracker Barrel menu costs $887.71. Make smart choices."
Legit.
Randy Orton, "I just beat AJ Styles at Mario Kart on the Switch. Ask Xavier Woods. He was a witness." AJ replied, "Played with a Joy-Con, not the full controller. He has all the upgrades for his carts. I just got the game. My thumb hurts and I'm sleepy." Sami Zayn replied, "Batter Man better be getting some royalties for this tweet." Because, you know, he's full of excuses.
Yep.
And then AJ replied to something to the effect, "You have a nickel on the way." That was... Tweet of the week.
All right, let's do SmackDown.
Time for SmackDown.
It's time for the Kevin Owens Show Throwdown.
Welcome to the Kevin Owens Show.
Like I said, we have a new bumper.
It's not the Kevin Owens Show yet.
That's how the show started.
That's the how the show started, but he doesn't own it yet. He hasn't sued yet.
See, I wanted to be play nice with Kevin Owens. We're calling this the Kevin Owens Throwdown. Just saying.
No,
Okay, she disagrees. I'm all for it being Kevin Owens' show throwdown.
I don't want the Fashion Police to get canceled.
Yeah, but it's... Oh, okay. Anyway, so that was on his list of things to do. He was also looking to fire Sami Zayn.
Because we all knew that was coming.
We all knew that was coming. He also wants to have hashtag two guys, one suit. Meaning Byron Saxon and Tom Phillips wear the same suit.
Yep.
Together.
Corey was snickering. He couldn't help himself.
He really couldn't help himself. So Kevin Owens basically wants to turn SmackDown into his own show because he's going to sue and all that fun stuff. That's how the show opened. We'll get to how the show closed. But there's a few things we need to address as the show goes on. Unless you want to have something for the open. Or are you good?
I'm good. I mean, the opening was fine. It was good. It was well done. I liked it. Kevin, there was a moment where Dolph came out and did more of his bitter fake entrances kind of thing.
And that's where we go to next. Dolph, stop.
Dolph needs to stop doing the girls.
He needs to stop doing the girls, and Daniel Warrior wanted to probably F him up as well.
Yeah. Dude, you're playing with fire there. Just saying. I mean, first Naomi and now Bailey. Dude, no. No. Honey, no. They will mess you up.
Okay, so we need to address this. So he came out, he did Bailey, did Ultimate Warrior. And he says, there's no one who could... Everyone can do this, but no one can do what I do in the ring. Lose in the ring? Is that what no one else can do? Because I see a lot of people doing that, too. Just like I've seen you lose a lot in the ring, too.
Try to be a really cheap version of Shawn Michaels?
We've seen that. A lot of places. It's kind of a thing. It's kind of what people do.
Shawn Michaels and Hunter's love child is in NXT right now.
Yeah. But it's like, I hope Bobby Roode shows up, kicks his ass, and we're done with Dolph Ziggler.
I can kind of see what he's going for, but it's not coming across well. Where it's like, well, you know, there's only one me. I'm unique. I'm original, but none of you care. All you care about is flash, no substance. Which I find a little hypocritical of Dolph Ziggler, seeing as he's been all flash and minimal substance for years now. I think he's always been sort of all flash and minimal substance. That's his entire gimmick. I mean, he's the quote-unquote show-off. So, I mean, I get where he's going with it. I just don't think it's translating.
No, I don't think it's translating, no.
Because he just comes across as really jaded and really bitter.
Yep.
And maybe that's intentional. I hope it's intentional. I had a conversation with somebody about this on Tumblr. It's like, I really hope that the bitterness and the jadedness is a part of it and is supposed to come across, and that's what we're reading. Because then he's doing an excellent job. But if not, it's like, he just sounds... It's like, you know what? Okay, well, if you're not happy, if you're pissed, leave. There's the door, dude. Nobody's stopping you.
Exactly.
I mean, that's kind of my thing, is like, you have him coming out of here mocking more entrances that are of people that are more successful than he is, and it's, okay, well, granted, you've been legitimately screwed over, you have major gripes with the company, which I respect. Some people feel you haven't gotten the chance you deserve. I feel like he's gotten more than the chance that he's deserved, but in his mind, he hasn't, so be it. And it's just, it's tiresome at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very, very, very tiresome, and it's like, you know what, just take it and leave, kind of thing.
You know what needs to stop as well?
Hmm.
Jinder Mahal.
Oh, Lord.
And him trying to do comedy.
Oh, Lord, Jinder.
So, Jinder, Mr. Constipation Face himself, was making constipation jokes about Shinsuke. He also was doing very stereotype jokes and comments towards Shinsuke as well. Your gimmick is you complain about people judging you based on stereotype, yet you're now mocking someone for stereotypes. Promo sucked. The Sting Brothers didn't help. It didn't get over with anyone. It did not make me want to see the match anymore. It made me want to see it less.
Yeah, there was something in this that the writing was really, really, really poor. I mean, I get it. Jinder, they're portraying Jinder as a heel in the States when he's actually being portrayed as a face in India, which is just bizarre. But I get it. We're all the evil Americans that are booing the great Jinder Mahal. Anyway, and you have him basically, I forget exactly what it was, but it's like when Shinsuke does his pose with his hands and he's sort of shaking. Jinder compared that to a seizure. And then you had the Singh brothers mocking a seizure. You had Jinder mocking a seizure. And it was like, yeah, I'm not sure I'm okay with that. Like, I can deal with a lot in wrestling, but to me, it's like, yeah, there were so many other better ways to handle that than doing what you did. And I mean, you have you have one racial stereotype stereotyping someone else, is basically what this was.
Yep.
And it's just, it's like, you could, again, Ginger could be written so much better than what he is, but for whatever reason, they're writing him like this, and I just don't understand it.
Now, let's get to some positives.
Yes.
Naomi and Natalya, for the time they got, was really good.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
We now know that Carmella has now a kink.
Yeah, okay. So, I don't know who the writer or writers are on Raw and SmackDown, but whoever you are that these, you know, like, kinky as hell things keep popping up, you know, like casual bondage, begging, blood play, worship, leashes and collars, all that kind of stuff. Props to you for letting your freak flag fly in public. I'm very proud of you. That being said, what? You had Carmella leading James Ellsworth around on a leash. I don't even know. It actually brought back memories of Luna and Goldust.
We can also say, and new Day Rocks, as they are the new WWE SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions.
Yes.
Good match.
They couldn't have done that during Fantasy, but okay.
Well, they did, and then they lost it at the end.
But they didn't keep...
I know. Anyway. Good match. Kofi stayed true to his word. He twerked on the strip after winning the belts. He did not give a false promise. He delivered. There's video on his Twitter. Kind of a thing. AJ retained the U.S. title over Ty Dillinger. Looks like Baron Corbin and AJ Styles' direction. We'll see how good the match is when they do battle. And then there's the ending segment. Kevin Owens and Vincent Kennedy McMahon had an awesome segment. The verbal exchange was really good. Vince McMahon came suspended Shane because Shane didn't get the job done. And then Vince McMahon officially announced that it will be Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon, inside Hell in a Cell. Kevin Owens was kind of mad, but then realized he can do this. He can take on Shane. And then he just wanted to make it clear that he can do whatever he wants to a McMahon, and he wouldn't be fired. Vince was like, yeah. Well, that was the sign of things Vince McMahon will regret in his life. Kevin Owens decided, okay, we'll shake hands. It's agreed upon. Here's a headbutt to the forehead. Vince McMahon gets bloody, planned, bloodied, gets kicked in the ribs, gets super kicked. And then Adam Pearce is trying to cover up Vince. It's like, no, Kevin, no, don't do it, don't do it. Kevin comes off the top, hits the frog splash, down on the injured Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon gets helped to the back. Stephanie McMahon gets up in the face of Kevin Owens. And that's how SmackDown ended. It was a tremendous segment. I know there was a bunch of people go, why are they doing headbutts with concussion lawsuits and everything like that? I understand that point. But from a wrestling segment standpoint, this was really good and it put Kevin on the map.
Sorry. This is a nod to Kevin Owens. Vince does not work with just anybody, especially as he's gotten older. He handpicks and chooses really who he wants to work with. And Kevin's getting the nod right now from Vince. Because Vince let him, you know, headbutt him, took a couple kicks to the ribs, and then took a frog splash. So this was absolutely fantastic. I love this. Adam Pearce deserves a raise. Because, you know, he's constantly breaking up fights, the poor man. He probably can never get anything done. But yeah, this segment worked. 100% worked. And we should note that at the top of the show, you had Dolph come out of Shane McMahon.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
It's worth mentioning again. I don't think I mentioned Shane specifically.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I enjoyed the ending of the show.
So yeah, so this was a really, really great way to continue the storyline between Kevin and the McMahons. Because he can beat up any McMahon if he's provoked.
Yep.
Just saying. But that does it for SmackDown. Let's do NXT.
It's time for this week's edition of the NXT Rundown.
As we picked up from last week, Ruby Riott wanted a match with Peyton Royce and Billie Kay, but she needed to find a partner. So she comes out for the match, and she has no partner. But as the match is going on, a minute or so in, someone is lurking around, one Nikki Cross. So Nikki Cross eventually tags herself in, runs wild, tags out, Ruby Riott hits her finish, gets the win. The combination of Ruby Riott and Nikki Cross is very intriguing.
I'm liking this. I'm liking this a lot. I feel like they're going to make good dance partners, both in a feud and as a tag team. I'm okay with this. Plus, it's Nikki Cross. I will take anything with Nikki Cross on my TV because I love her so very much. So, yeah. And for those of you just tuning in, this is The Rack on wildtalkradio.com. Coming up on the next break, or after the next break, is Brian Shields, where he's talking to us about his brand new book, Second Nature. So you don't want to miss that. So what's next?
You had Johnny Gargano beat Riddick Moss.
There was some really beautiful storytelling in this.
Gargano is still thinking about his old partner. He's still questioning whether he should be doing this alone. So his past is still haunting him. I thought it was good.
I mean, it was really well done. You had a good showing by Riddick Moss.
Yeah, it's fine. Fine match. The Street Profits beat the Ely Brothers. I don't get the Street Profits, but that's me. We don't know anything about the future of the women's title, but we sort of talked about that earlier. Next week, we'll hear for the first time ever, Aleister Black. But our main event was Pete Dunne Wolfgang for the UK title.
This was good.
Really good match. Fun stuff. In the end, Pete Dunne picked up the win, but then that was not what was key in this match.
No.
It was afterwards. You had Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and Adam Cole come out, and they attacked Pete Dunne. He tried to run. He tried to fight. He actually got the first shot in, but he got beaten down. Wolfgang made the save. And then Dunne left.
Dunne was tired. He got his gold husband, and he walked to the back, and he told his real husbands, Trent and Tyler, hey, go deal with this crap. And that's exactly what happened, because as Adam Cole and Red Dragon are beating up Wolfgang, out comes Trent Seven and Tyler Bate to make the save. They run off Adam Cole and Red Dragon, and the two have a, or I should say the five, have a stare down between each other, which it got announced then after the show that Seven and Bate have had enough. And next week we get British Strong Style versus Red Dragon. I'm like ready for this.
Should mention, like you mentioned, he came back for his gold husband. It's like there was a tease, like he's gonna come back and make the save for Wolfgang, and no, he just goes back and grabs his belt. So the fans were all excited, and then boo.
Pete Dunne, professional a-hole.
Pretty much.
But pretty yeah. much.
So next week we had Aleister Black. We get the UK guys in action against Red Dragon. Should be a fun show next week.
Should be a good show next week.
But that's NXT in a nutshell, because we got to get the Brian Shields.
That's right. So the moment you've all been waiting for is here. So when we come back, we are talking to one of our favorite guests ever, Brian Shields, where he's going to tell us all about his brand new book, Second Nature, and you'll find out how you might be able to win a copy for yourself. So you're listening to The Rack right here on wildtalkradio.com, and we'll be right back. The Rack Extra gets a little Bella in the form of Total Bellas. Join us each week as we review the latest happenings going on in the world of the Bellas.
I feel like I'm trapped, like living in a padded cell.
Check out The Rack Extra, Total Bellas Weekly at wildtalkradio.com and rackradioshow.com.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday nights when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Out and about when your favorite WTR program is on the air. Don't worry, we've got you covered. You can listen to WTR on the go with TuneIn Radio. Just download the TuneIn Radio app for your Android or iPhone, iPad or tablet, and search for Wild Talk Radio Network.
Best of all, it's free. What are you waiting for? Download the TuneIn Radio app today. Tune in to WTR, wherever you are.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, and you're listening to Rack Radio.
And welcome back to the Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at Wrestling Figure Photography. Follow the journey today at Instagram.com/MBG1211. And well, if you're listening to us over at Gerwick.net, RackRadioShow.com, or WildTalkRadio.com, thank you so much for tuning in. If you get a quick second, check out the fine folks over at FightBoot.com because they're posting amazing things, like what we're about to do, because joining us right now is one of our favorite people and the author of the new book, Second Nature, best-selling author Brian Shields. How are you doing today?
Hi, guys. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
We are super excited because it's been a long time.
It has. It definitely has. Too long.
Yes, too long. We need to have you on more often.
I'm all in.
All right. So let's get the business out of the way. We're talking to you about your brand new book, The Fabulous Page Turner, Second Nature, about Charlotte and Ric Flair. Everybody, you have to pick this up. It's fabulous.
Well, look, thank you so much. I mean, this is just such an exciting time. You know, Second Nature comes out September 19th, and it's the most amazing thing that I've ever been able to be a part of during my career. And I couldn't be more proud of the book, having the honor to work with the Nature Boy and Charlotte. And I can't wait for people to be able to read it and enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I personally enjoyed was you captured both their voices so well.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you could definitely see the difference between Rick and Charlotte, because obviously they're two very different people, and I feel like you captured their voices and what they were trying to get across and their stories really, really, really well.
Well, thank you. I mean, you know, look, that was one of those things where I knew going into it that would be a creative challenge, but this was such a collaborative team effort between the three of us that I knew very early on that it was something I had to be mindful of because they are two different people. But it was something that I became comfortable doing and working within as time went on. And I got to just continue working and collaborating with them.
And how did this even kind of come about? Who had this idea? Was this your idea or was this WWE's idea? Who kind of came up with the notion of doing a dual memoir with Charlotte and Ric Flair?
Well, the idea to do a book with Rick and Charlotte, that was something that was put together with WWE and Rick's management and Charlotte. I was asked to put together a concept based on that premise. I was told that there was going to be a dual biography and that I would have the opportunity to speak with them about the concept. So I just started, you know, I kick it old school. So I write everything on paper first. There are notebooks all over the place. So I just started brainstorming different ideas and different concepts on what I think the book could be. And that was kind of the general frame. And then, you know, working with them, that's when we really filled everything in. And it was really, I mean, I cannot emphasize this enough. It was such a collaborative process that it was, I mean, to have that as a writer is an incredible gift.
Oh, I bet. Because, I mean, you got to sit down and speak with them. And I read Charlotte's dedication and where she was saying, you know, you worked around her crazy schedule. You worked nights. You were pretty much available whenever she was available to take down her stories and also Rick's stories. So, I mean, was the schedule a challenge?
It wasn't a challenge. I mean, first of all, you know, Charlotte and Rick are very kind in terms of making sure that they mention my part in the book. But, you know, I mean, this was them. I mean, it was their story together. And, you know, as far as the schedule goes, you know, I've been working with WWE in some form or fashion for 19 years. So, you know, for me, I love the, you know, there's no off season and you're kind of always going. Then again, I'm not the one working in a ring, so it's easy for me to say, but, I didn't find it challenging at all. You know, guys, when you're working on a project like this, which is so labor intensive, you get into a different zone, a different frame of mind, and you just keep going. And, you know, the three of us worked on this for a little over a year and a half.
Wow.
And you know, I mean, countless phone calls that I had with both of them, several in-person meetings, text messages, emails. I mean, you name it. You know, I mean, the only thing we didn't use was Morse code and the bat signal.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been awesome. But, you know, I mean, really, it was just one of those things where, you know, when you start working with this type of project, everybody is just so motivated to get it done and get it done properly. And that's one of the things right away that Rick and Charlotte told me was, we want this book to be true. We want this to be the real story, the ups, the downs, all of it. And that right away helped me frame what we were doing.
I can respect that. Yeah. I mean, and you speak of the downs. Were some of the downs difficult to handle? Because I know it talks about Reed's death and it talks about Charlotte's first marriage where she was in an abusive relationship. Was that difficult to, I mean, obviously had to be difficult to hear, I'm sure, but also just to write and to turn into a story?
It was, because I can't say this enough, like, this is real. This is the real, you know, the real story about, you know, picking up where Ric Flair's career, you know, in 2007 when, you know, so basically readers are with him from the moment he's in that ring in Charlotte in November 2007, and Vince McMahon establishes that the next match he loses, his career is over. So the readers right there pick up where Rick is in his career at that time. You're going with him through that night, his matches between then and WrestleMania, going into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, I mean, that was the thing, was that it was, you know, the difficult parts of the book that they both share were difficult just because, you know, they're wonderful people and you're hearing what they went through. But at the same time, I think it was a little easier for me knowing how they came out of it so well on the other side, so that it was that made it a little bit a little bit easier. But yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're talking about some very personal things in this book for both Rick and Charlotte. I mean, Rick talks about his bouts at time with self-confidence issues, dealing with his retirement, being torn about his retirement, the problems and some of the things that he suffered through during his last two marriages. And then with, you know, as you mentioned, Lindsay, Reed's passing, and then the intimate things that Charlotte shares, you know, it's definitely a lot.
It really is. And you and I were talking the other day before this interview, and we talked about how, you know, Ric Flair's retirement was key for his section of the book. And we all heard the story and saw the story take place on TV. Mm-hmm. And then you got to hear it from him. And then going back now, watching it again on the WWE Network, it gives you a different perspective of what he was actually going through. And it's sort of like, what to you, how did you see it differently after hearing the story from him?
Well, I mean, and I think that's the unique thing about the book, guys, is that the reader here is being taken through their life through their eyes. So, you know, hearing these things from Rick personally, and really getting to see, which is why speaking to somebody and meeting with them in person is so important, because you sense that emotion from them. You see the expressions on their face, the tones of their voices when they're talking about these things. And, you know, people, and he said this in the book, you know, people had no idea just how real the words he was saying during many of his interview segments were. No one had any idea, and not even his family, not even, you know, his wife at the time, but, you know, no one knew just how much all of this meant to him and how torn he was about actually, you know, doing it.
Yeah, and you could see it on his face, but now you're actually hearing his side of the story. It's like, wow, that's incredible, the realness of it. And it transformed, you saw it transpire on TV, and it's like, that is real. And that's what hooks you, and that's what hooks you into this book, because it feels authentic, it feels real. You're not getting some ghostwriter telling, you know, his side of the story. You're actually hearing the real story. I like the part of the book where it's like, they're telling about the storyline, the direction they're going for his retirement, and they told him one thing not to do, and it was tell Sean. He called right. Sean. That was the first thing he did, was right. call Sean.
Well, and, you know, and even something like that, I mean, it meant so much to him. And, you know, he's talked about this over the years, and it's in the book. You know, he holds the McMahon family and Triple H and all of WWE in such a high regard because of how they've honored his career and have held his career in such rarefied air. So all of these things, I mean, to have Shawn Michaels be the opponent was just unbelievable for him. And, you know, I enjoyed also learning that he was, you know, supposed to be on the main card for WrestleMania 23. And, you know, I don't want to ruin anything for your audience, so I'm just going to say, you know, we talk about that too. There was something that Rick did during an interview segment that was so well received that it ended up changing his creative direction on television, that ended up keeping him off of the WrestleMania 23 main card. So you hear those types of things as well. I mean, it's just an incredible story of two people who, by the way, you will also understand and learn about how close Rick is not only to Charlotte, but to all of his children. I mean, we've always heard, you know, the, you know, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, you know, nature boy. But the other side to that is this incredibly loving, devoted father. And you learn about their ups and downs in their relationship as well.
Yeah, you really get a sense of how good their relationship was. And then there was a period in time through one of Rick's divorces where their relationship sort of was really strained. And you get a good perspective from both sides, I guess is the best way to put it, since it's a dual biography type thing. You get both sides of the story and how it all transpired. But at the end of the day, he was always there for his children, which is great to see and read. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and especially, you know, when you talk about being in an industry that has no off season, you're on the road more than 300 days a year. I mean, you know, it's incredible to be able to continue that relationship and connection with your kids. You know, but guys, you know, just to further illustrate my point, he's also very candid about how his two older children, Megan and David, did not have that growing up when he was the NWA world champion, and that he would see them maybe 7 to 10 times a year, and how that was kind of a learning, you know, a learning experience for him, and how grateful he was later on to be home so much for Charlotte and Reed. So, you know, there are so many different things that are discussed in quite candid detail in the book, which is why I think so many different types of people are going to enjoy reading it.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, because I think, you know, for me, it's like you mentioned, all we see is the Ric Flair that we see on TV. You know, the wheeling, dealing, kiss, stealing son of a gun. And it's like, you, and we, Brock and I have this conversation offline a lot where it's like, I think a lot of fans, and even we forget it, I think everybody forgets it, that wrestlers are people too. And what you see on TV isn't what you get, you know, in real life. That's not who he is in real life. He's somebody completely different, you know, when he goes home to his wife and his children. So it was really refreshing and cool to see that, those candid stories in there of him talking about his wives and his children and his relationship with all of them and how he kind of grew as a person from his older children to his younger children and how absolutely. He made that effort to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even the decision that he made to give his Hall of Fame speech as the man, you know, Richard Flair, and not the Nature Boy. I mean, those were, you know, there, that's what I mean. Like, there are so many things that people are going to learn in this book that, I cannot wait for fans of all ages, to be able to open it up and learn about them.
So I have to know, do you have like a favorite story that made it into the book? 'Cause I'm sure there were many that didn't, but do you have a favorite one that made it in?
Oh, wow. There really are so many. I mean, on Charlotte's side, you're getting her entire life story.
Right.
So I was just fascinated by the portraits that she was painting of her life and what she wrote about. I mean, she has countless journal entries, and the writing that she did was unbelievable for the project. You know, hearing her experiences growing up in Charlotte with Ric Flair as her father, not really knowing just how important or how famous he was. And, you know, she really had no desire to get into wrestling. She was a very high level gymnast. I mean, she was also a top ranking cheerleader. They toured nationally and internationally. And then she was an NCAA Division I volleyball player. So, the one story for her early on that sticks out for me is, you know, they love movies in the Flair house, and the story of her waiting for her dad to come home, and he was gone a little longer than usual. They were waiting to see Jurassic Park, the movie, when it came out. And Rick and Arn Anderson that weekend were squaring off against the Hollywood Blondes, one of my favorite tag teams of all time, Stunning Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. So those kinds of, you know, there are so many stories like that. I mean, you know, Charlotte and Reed meeting Michael Jordan and thinking nothing of it. They just thought he was a very nice man who was friends with their dad. You know, so those are some of the things early in her chapters that really stood out for me, just because I was fascinated by that. And for, you know, on Rick's side, I love, there's a story in there, because, guys, you know, the book is the legacy of Ric Flair. So even though the story picks up in November of 2007, people are going to have the opportunity to learn about all different parts of the Nature Boy's life and his career. So I think, you know, to me, there's a great story of when he was a kid. And he hitchhiked his way from Minnesota to Florida so he could go to spring break with a friend. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
It's such a him thing to do, too.
It is. That's what, like, you know, and you know, and he talks about that as well. Like, the, you know, this has always been me. I've always had an appreciation for, you know, the finer things in life, nice suits, nice cars, nice watches. He talks about, you know, that possibly, you know, going to a private boarding school and being around kids that really grew up in very wealthy families, you know, could have contributed to that. But that's what I mean, that there's a level of candor and detail in Second Nature that I think people are really going to enjoy.
Things you mentioned about, you know, this is a book for all ages. When you get to Charlotte's chapters of the book, her section basically, you really get to see a brother and sister really great dynamic. And that was something that really came across in this book. Are you happy with how that dynamic was delivered?
Yes. Yes, because it was all, you know, Charlotte. I mean, it was all her, you know, sharing the intimate details of her life. And, you know, and one of the many highlights for me in being able to work with the Flairs on this book is learning about how much of an amazing person Reed Flair was, and how devoted to his family he was, and how much he loved his family, how great of a friend he was to those who he was friends with, you know, sticking up for kids in school that would get picked on, you know. But then there were some great stories as well. I mean, he had a great sense of humor, and you know, one of the stories that I enjoyed involving Reed was that there was a summer where he was teaching kids at their country club how to play different sports, and started taking those kids after those practice sessions to the club restaurant for lunch. And, you know, Charlotte's parents opened up in the mail a very large bill from the country club. They had no idea who spent that amount of money, how that amount was even reached. I mean, it, just great, great stuff, really learning about the person that Reed Flair was and how beloved he was by all who knew him.
Yeah, and it really came across that way, that it was such an unfortunate tragedy what happened with him, as you find out, you know, the struggles he had and everything Ric Flair did for him to make sure he got back on track. And it was unfortunate what happened. By the way, for those tuning in, this is The Rock live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. At the end of this interview, we will tell you how you can win a copy of this book signed by Ric Flair and Charlotte Flair. I'll tell you about that at the end. One subject that was interesting that you touched upon in this book, TNA wrestling. That was that seems like that's a first for a WWE book.
Well, you know, I mean, guys, I have to tell you, with all the years that I've been working with WWE, there has never been a subject that I was told could not be part of a book, not to talk about, not to ask about. And again, you know, going back to this, I mean, the stuff with WWE has always been, if it's true, if it's accurate, if it's right, and if it's truly part of the story, then put it in. And, you know, that was a part of Rick's career, and he talks about it. You know, you hear from Shawn Michaels and his thought on that whole time period. You learn about how Rick really agonized over whether or not to make the move to TNA wrestling. And even though that is a relatively small part of his, you know, now more than 40 plus year career, it was very important, and it had to be, you know, it had to be in there. So yeah.
Now I want to transition a little bit away from wrestling, because, well, I shouldn't say away from wrestling. We're still going to stay in wrestling. Let's transition away from the book for a second, because I have to ask this question. Because Charlotte has been heavily featured in the Mayan Classic, which, as we're doing this interview, is getting ready to air.
Yes.
Has not aired yet. And so I have to know, who do you have?
If there's
to win it all.
If there's a 4-on-4, oh, to win it all. I'm sorry, I thought I was jumping ahead to the 4-on-4.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get there.
I think it's tough not to pick Shayna Baszler.
I can see that. I mean, she's.
I mean, you guys, here's the thing. You're talking about somebody who has an incredible mixed martial arts background. I mean, you know, she was trained by Billy Robinson for wrestling. I mean, this is someone who is incredibly accomplished, incredibly versatile. And I think, you know, to me, one of the toughest competitors to set foot in a ring, you know, male or female. But I think it's going to be a very, very close match. It's not going to be, you know, a couple of minutes and that's going to be it. I think it's going to be a battle.
I would agree with that. I mean, just watching Shayna through the entire tournament and watching her matches progressively get better, especially the last one that she had with Mercedes Martinez, which was just fantastic. I see nothing but good things with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and she has a poise in the ring. I think she's very comfortable in the ring. And I think she's somebody who, you know, you can hear the announcer say, you know, has a high ring IQ, knows every square inch of the ring. I mean, you know, it's, this is just my opinion. I mean, this is just the beginning for her.
Oh yeah. I would agree with that 110% because, you know, she has this just quality about her and this, like you said, in the effortlessness of the way that she just kind of goes out there and she's just like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm not impressed. And then she does what she does. And she is impressive. I think I could definitely see her taking it all. And now we're going to jump to the 4-on-4.
Okay.
Okay. So to me, this is huge for not only WWE, but also women's wrestling in general, because I feel like it's taking the whole women's revolution to that next step by adding the household names of, you know, the four horsewomen versus the four horsewomen and making this into something just huge. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but nothing like this has ever been done in women's wrestling in WWE before, correct?
Well, correct. But I want to add to that, you know, again, male or female. I mean, there's never been four mixed martial artists to be in a group and, you know, have a standoff with four WWE superstars.
It's something unique. It's something different. And we've had mainstream things in the years with a variety of different celebrities and whatever. But now you have someone who's a legitimate sports athlete in Ronda Rousey, who's possibly coming to WWE. And she's such a huge mainstream star just outside of the UFC, outside of mixed martial arts. This will take whatever the women's revolution evolution has been, it will take it mainstream, and this will open the doors for everybody.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing, too, with Ronda Rousey, guys, let's remember, she's an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she, I think, was a silver or bronze medalist in judo. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's incredibly accomplished, and I think the appeal that she has, I think this is a great time for it, and I think even just the timing of the Mae Young Classic is perfect. I think the women's division needed it to be right now, and I think whatever's going to happen down the road, there's great talent that competed in this tournament. And this 4-on-4 matchup, I mean, can go in so many exciting directions. And then you can break off into different smaller tag team or individual 1-on-1 matchups from there. It's very, very exciting.
If you want to make history, and there's no disrespect to any of the women on the main roster, Charlotte Flair, Ronda Rousey would main event a WrestleMania.
Absolutely.
If they want to accomplish that goal, to set it as we can do it, there's your mainstream star, there's your wrestling star, there's your headlines. That would close your show because it would get people talking.
I agree. I mean, and you're talking about two huge names in their respective areas that, I mean, we know that Charlotte Flair can deliver, and, you know, I mean, Second Nature ends, the book end is WrestleMania 32. I mean, you know, she delivers and gets better when the lights are shining at their brightest. So, you know, a big name competitor like Ronda Rousey is a phenomenal matchup, you know, but let's also be very clear, that in the WWE arena, you know, Charlotte Flair is quite the opponent for Ronda Rousey as well.
Oh, without question.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that as well. Just because it's the natural athleticism of the two. I mean, just, I'm excited for it, honestly. I'm excited for the 4-on-4. I'm excited for the tag teams. I'm excited for all of it. Like, they announced that, or they just kind of teased it, and I was sitting there watching the Mae Young Classic, and I just went, yes.
Yeah.
All of that.
I loved how it was done. And you know, guys, we've talked about this before, both on and off air. It's so difficult today with the internet and social media, and this is not anything new, but just as a reminder, you know, it's so difficult today to keep things under wraps, or just to, you know, do things in such a way where either it hasn't been done before or it doesn't resemble something else. And, you know, the way that this has been presented, and I know it's very early, but the way that this has been presented has been great. And it's just going to get better. I mean, it's just going to get more exciting. It's only September. I mean, think about it that way.
I think the best things in wrestling are the things that you have to wait for, because that anticipation builds. And part of the problem sometimes is everybody wants it like now. And I'm guilty of that. Rock's guilty of that. We're all guilty of that. Because it's like we see something happen or we hear about something and it's like, yes, no, I want this now. I want this right now. I want to see it. And there's no anticipation. There's no build to it. So the fact that they're just teasing it, you know, on the Mae Young Classic, they're kind of putting little ticklers out, you know, about it. They're having them talk smack to each other, starts to build that towards Mania. And it just kind of gets really more exciting the longer it takes, because you're like, well, when are they going to get together again? When are they going to do something else? You know, you want it more because you can't have it.
Well, I completely agree. And, you know, and I know that sometimes I'm guilty of that as well, that instant gratification. But, you know, I mean, the other thing too, guys, is, you know, everybody knows who Ronda Rousey is. You know, the other three horsewomen, you know, there are going to be members of the WWE universe who need to do their homework and know how accomplished these other three women are. I mean, Shayna Baszler is getting that recognition now. But, you know, I mean, it's just very, very exciting. And when you think about just how this can all play out, I mean, in the end, you know, Lindsay, like you said, it's great for the fans. It's great for the women's division. I mean, how do you not love it?
I mean, and another thing that they've kind of built the anticipation for moving away from the Women's Revolution is Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar. The accidental match that I don't think anybody ever expected to like really get as big as it did, but it did, is coming. Are you looking forward to that?
Oh, God, absolutely. I mean, what's amazing to me is if you look back, I mean, you heard all these supposed big plans for everybody else in the Wyatt family but Braun Strowman. I mean, in the beginning, and what he has done in his time in WWE is phenomenal. And I do want to point out, I think Brock Lesnar is doing some of his best work right now.
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
I think, guys, what I've noticed just as a fan is, you know, Brock Lesnar performs at a different level and does things with his character a little differently. I think when he has a certain almost respect for whether it's the physical power or the aura of the person that he's standing across the ring from. And for me, I think you saw that when Goldberg came back last year, you know, everybody talked about how quickly the match went and the spear and the jackhammer. And yes, that was very cool and very impressive. My favorite part of that match to me, besides the stare down, was when Goldberg shoves Brock to the mat. And that's that extra second Brock Lesnar looks at Paul Heyman and the look on Brock Lesnar's face.
Sort of the same look you saw on Monday Night Raw.
Right. That made it. And that made it real. It put Goldberg back on the map. And I really do. I think when he feels a certain way about an opponent, whether it's their athletic background, their physical strength or prowess, or the persona of their character, I think that's when he's really, really at his best. And, you know, the stuff that, that they're doing now, what we saw last night on Raw, I thought it was awesome. And Braun Strowman, I mean, you want to talk about someone who is just getting started.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's, you know, and I'm going to show my age here, but, you know, when Braun just got up after that German suplex, that reminded me when I was a kid and somebody would give a pile driver to Road Warrior Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And Hawk would just roll over and stand up, and it would, he would usually hit that great pose and then, you know, take someone's head off with a clothesline.
It's like, what else you got?
Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, God, Braun Strowman, was he 6 foot eight, 380 pounds?
He's built as a brick house. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah. And look at how the guy moves around the ring, his quickness, his agility. I mean, last night he's trading drop kicks with John Cena. Like, this is an incredible athlete.
And what you've seen with him is he came up to the main roster and he came up like really quickly. Like, they I think he was at the Performance Center less than a year mm-hmm. when they called him up, because it was one of those, hey, we just need a guy sort of things, because
yeah.
one of the Wyatt family members got hurt. So you saw him from there to where he is now, and just the improvement is night and day. I mean, he's, you can tell he's really buckled down and he's really made an effort to get better and get stronger and get faster. And if he just continues to do that, there's no limit to what he can do.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And, you know, guys, one of the other things that I always appreciate is when someone is having good matches with opponents of all different sizes, shapes, skill sets. And, you know, I mean, he's been doing that. I mean, no matter who he's in there with, the stuff has been very, very exciting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, at least for me, it was, I believe, the first time he and Brock kind of sort of met. And Brock's looking him over, looking him up and down, and Brock's going, yeah, yeah, you and I could have some fun.
Yeah.
It was that moment that you're just like, yes, do it. Do the thing. Please book it. Please do it. And they did the four-way, and we got the tease of it, and Braun Strowman just went to town on everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been all systems go from there. I mean, there has not been, there haven't been too many things. I can't even think of anything off the top of my head that I've seen that Braun Strowman is a part of that I have not been into and really excited about. I mean, the match with Brock Lesnar, very similar, though different, similar in principle to Brock's match with Samoa Joe, where to me, I just feel like, God, I hope there's a trilogy of matches with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah, with Braun Strowman, it's, man, it's going to be really, really exciting looking at what he's going to do the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah. For Brock and Joe, I want them to go like one more time, and I want them to go a little bit longer than what they did the last time they fought, because I feel like they got a little shortchanged and they weren't able to quite get to that next gear before it was over. So I just want them to get just a little bit longer just to really sort of step that up, because I feel like Joe was another one where Brock went, yeah, we can do this. We can have fun.
Absolutely.
And I feel like, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm with you. I was just saying, I'm with you 100%. I think that Joe is definitely part of this, you know, this select group for sure.
Yeah. And he's another one that it's, I feel like once he comes back from his unfortunate injury, that he's going to be another one to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, and if you look at the success of an AJ Styles, of a Samoa Joe, I mean, these are guys. Kevin Owens is another one. You know, I mean, there are certain talent who people waited a very long time and hoped that the day would come that they would perform in WWE. And, you know, since those guys got to WWE. I mean, they've just done phenomenal work. And I know Bobby Roode just got called up to SmackDown, you know, but he's another one. It's like they are completely ready to take this opportunity and just take their career to a new level.
I love Bobby. I love what Bobby's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like he took what he was doing in TNA and he just turned up the volume tenfold, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, because he's, again, somebody who's so versatile, great in the ring, great on the mic, great look. I mean, you know, he's somebody else that can just turn it up, and he's been doing great things.
Yeah. It's kind of wild. I was talking to Rock about this. It's like, it's really kind of wild that Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Bobby Roode are all there together, and so many others, but just, it's wild when you actually look who's there right now. It's crazy.
It is. I mean, if you have followed, basically, if you followed wrestling since the close of ECW and WCW, so if you followed wrestling from, like, let's say, winter or spring of 2001 to current day, I mean, it's very exciting to see the names who have come through WWE and what they've accomplished. And, you know, to me, AJ Styles right now is the best wrestler in the world, pound for pound. The matches that he has had since debuting in WWE have been tremendous. And, you know, I mean, SmackDown's on during our conversation. I mean, tonight, I thought he had a heck of a good match with Ty Dillinger. I mean, anybody who he is in the ring with, singles, tag team, you name it, he's just done great stuff.
Oh, yeah. And him and Dillinger had a fantastic match, the series with Kevin Owens, the series with John Cena. And I feel like there's nobody that AJ Styles can have a bad match with. Because he really is that good.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and he's, it seems to me there are some people who feel like he's at his best right now. So, you know, timing, you know, it may have been a little later than people have wanted, which is just, I think, a testament to AJ Styles and the talent that he is. But the timing has worked out. I mean, the stuff that he's done is great.
I feel like they all, you know, everybody takes a path to get where they want to be. And some people get there quicker than others. And especially for someone like AJ, I feel like him leaving TNA and going to Japan is what he needed to do.
Oh, I agree. I was talking about this at a retro gaming convention that I was speaking at last weekend. Somebody had a Bullet Club shirt on in the audience. And to me, that was a huge turning point for AJ Styles in his career. Leading that group, very high profile group, in Japan, where that kind of stuff gets a lot of attention, you know, in that time where there was really a resurgence in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, absolutely. It was a huge, huge turning point. And I think it helped him get ready to be the main player that he is in WWE right now.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Because, I mean, for what he got to do for TNA, it was like, that was great. Not discounting anything he did in TNA, but I feel like if he had gone right from TNA to WWE, that he maybe wouldn't, it would have taken him just a little bit longer to get where on the level that he is now. So it's like going over there took him to that next level.
I agree. And I think it might have been the Jericho podcast, one of the interviews that he's done, and I've really enjoyed his interviews. It might even be the Stone Cold podcast. But he's alluded to that as well.
And it's just he's not the AJ he was in TNA. He's matured, he's changed, he's more settled, and part of that comes with age and experience, where it's just he's very secure in who he is. He's very comfortable where he is in his career. And now it's like, I feel like he's doing this for fun and for money. But mainly, yeah. I feel like a lot of these guys now is they can have fun with it.
Yeah. And I think it must have been a big help also, you know, coming in as AJ Styles, you know, having that great reaction at the Royal Rumble. I mean, these are all things along the way that are a big deal for a WWE superstar. So, yeah, I mean, and we've been enjoying it ever since.
Yes, agreed. So, can we convince you to write an AJ Styles book?
Well, that's up to AJ. But I would love to do it. I mean, he's somebody who I've enjoyed his work for many years. I admire him a great deal. And, he definitely has, dare I say, a phenomenal story. So, you know, if he's ever interested and ever looking for a writer, I'd love to throw my hat in the ring.
I'll take a ride out to Gainesville, see if I can find him for you.
That sounds good to me.
AJ, I know a guy.
Yeah. Hey, I'll fly down. I went to Atlanta to have a great meetings with the Nature Boy, so I can get from New York to I fly into Atlanta very quickly.
I was gonna say, were you shocked at the news when he went in the hospital?
Yes. And just thank goodness that he has made it through and that he's recovering. I mean, and I know that everybody has said that, but I just, this is somebody who, even though he's not a WWE superstar anymore and he's not on the main roster every week. I mean, guys, I have to tell you, his appearance schedule, the demand to meet Ric Flair, or to have large corporations bring him in and give speeches to their executives or sales and marketing departments is at an all-time high. I mean, he's still on the road. You know, if it's not 300 days a year, it's pretty close.
Yeah, and it's like, it was crazy because he was supposed to be at Dragon Con this year.
Yes.
He was scheduled to appear, and he went in the hospital, and it's like, oh, God, I hope he's going to be okay. Like, we were all crossing our fingers and praying for him and everything, and it was, and, obviously he had to pull out of Dragon Con, but, yeah, he was still appearing, and he was still going to appear before his hospital appearance with Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, guys, and, that's what I mean. There's so many, countless phone calls. I mean, he's on his way, I've never worked with somebody at his level who is so humble, so easy to work with. And I mean, he's on his way to the airport. We're having a call. He just landed. We're having a call, before an appearance, after an appearance. I mean, there's a work ethic there that he was famous for when he was performing inside the ring. That work ethic has stayed with him, and he's carried that through now to the other, this other part of his career. There were times where I would be doing, interviews with him in person. I mean, and people are coming up to him asking for pictures, asking for autographs. I mean, this is somebody who is in very exclusive company when you talk about someone who has been at the top of a industry for more than 40 years. I mean, there aren't too many people in sports entertainment or professional wrestling who have enjoyed that level of fame and recognition, and it's been so consistent. And, and we talk about that in the book also because it's something that he's very grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's so wonderful because you love to see that in people where they don't let it go to their heads and they don't take it too seriously. And I mean, I know he has to take it seriously because this is his job. This is his livelihood. But the fact that it hasn't gotten to him at this age, that he's still humble and he's still him and he's not afraid to be himself. That's really cool to see.
Yeah. And I think that there's something to the connection that he has had with his fans, which again, you're now talking about a more than a 40-year relationship. It's a very powerful connection. It's something, and you can tell, and I saw it in person. It means everything to him, and it means everything to them right back. And, it's something that is very, very special.
Agreed. Because, I mean, for whatever reason, in wrestling. It's crazy. But we develop these, you know, connections to wrestlers. We see them on TV every week. You know, we don't know them, but we, you know, you see that person on TV and you're like, yay, that's my guy or that's my girl. And, you know, you have that deep, powerful connection. So when something happens to them, like what happened with Ric Flair, you're gutted. And, you know, you're sending those thoughts and those prayers and you want to send flowers and everything like that to them to make sure that they know that, hey, yes, you're loved and you're thought of and, you know, we want you to get better. And so
it is, and I think it's a special type of relationship that wrestlers enjoy with their fans on a level that is different than in other forms of sport and entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as it's the respectful kind, we're not going to get into the weird kind.
Well, yeah, as long as everybody, you know, keeps things within respectful bounds and no one gets weird. You know, but you know, guys, even that, I mean, you know, one of the things I remember learning from Charlotte was, you know, and we mentioned it in the book that, you know, there was a woman from the, I believe, beginning in the late 80s, early 90s, late 80s, you know, stalked Rick. And we talk about that in the book you know, some of the bizarre things that this woman did, and even, you know, to go so far as to break into their home, which, you know, I'm not gonna ruin for people who are getting the book. But yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, you know, there are people that unfortunately take things way too far. But you know, it's just not including that. The relationship with the fans are very special.
Yes, that's what we're going to go with. It's very special. Don't get weird, y'all. Don't get weird.
So, switching gears just a little bit. Remember, everyone, you can get the book. We'll tell you how you win a copy of the book here in a few minutes. But we've talked about the Mae Young Classic. We've had the Dusty Rhodes Classic. We've had the Cruiserweight Classic. You're Mr. WWE Encyclopedia. What type of tournament would you like to see next?
Wow.
You forgot the Brits.
Okay, we had the UK tournament.
Oh man. Well, they've already had the two that I was really big on with the UK and the women. I'll say that because I've had a love and appreciation of Japanese wrestling for, you know, much of my life, and have, I don't even know how many tapes.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see something specific to Japanese competitors.
That would be cool. The one I want to see, because we've talked about a lot with Brock and Samoa Joe and stuff, like the big man tournament. Get 16 big guys and just let them beat the crap out of each other.
So almost like a, not a tough man, but almost like just a, like, just let the big guys get in there and brawl.
Yeah, just something like that. Just like big men just beat on each other. Because that's, you know, if you like UFC, that's what you sort of see. It's like, just let big guys be big guys. Not really slow guys like the Great Khali, but athletes. Big athletes, just let them beat on each other. I think that would be fun.
Khali's athletic in his own way.
In his own way. In his own way.
I wouldn't mind them, like, on a variation on a theme for the UK, opening it up to Europe, because there's so many fantastic European talents, and opening that up just to everybody in Europe, or even, you know, just go continent by continent, do, you know, an Australian tournament. Because, you know, I know a guy that should totally be in it if they ever do Australia.
to that point, I'd love maybe like a European Cup. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's, you know, between UK, Ireland, Germany, I mean, there is some great, great wrestling history in those countries. I would love to see something like that.
Yeah, that would be fun to see as well. The way things are going, and you've seen the rise of Charlotte, what is one thing you learned from speaking with her for the year and a half that you didn't know, and has it been enjoyable to see her progression from all the stories you heard about her on television?
Well, the things that I didn't know about her were really everything that we talk about in the book as it pertains to her her personal life. I mean, I knew, I knew that Ric Flair had a daughter that was a college volleyball player because it got media attention. And when she signed with WWE, that information was part of the media picking up that story. Mm-hmm. But I think her entire upbringing, which I find so fascinating, the connection that she had with her younger brother, Reed. I mean, they could almost be twins. They were so close. And, you know, I mean, the personal trials and tribulations that she shares in the book is something that's being shared publicly for the first time ever. So, it took an incredible amount of courage and bravery for her to share that, for Rick to share the things that he shared in the book, and for me now to see all the incredible things that Charlotte has done and I know that she'll continue to do is just incredible, because there's not a more deserving person. The talent is there, the natural athleticism and the natural gifts are there, but that doesn't mean that a person is necessarily going to work hard. It doesn't mean that they're going to be dedicated to honing their craft. And I mean, she is an incredible person in every possible way. And, you know, and an inspiring person, both personally and professionally. So I can't wait to see what else she accomplishes.
Now, we've been teasing this the entire night. We mentioned it last week, but we're going to tell everyone now how you can win a copy, an autographed copy of Second Nature, written with Charlotte, Ric Flair, and our guest, Brian Shields. Every month we do WTR Pick'em. You pick up, then we go to the pay-per-view. That's all you have to do. Pick matches correctly for no mercy. That's it. If you get them all, the best record of them all, you win a signed copy of the book. That simple.
That's awesome. Can I get in on that?
No.
Okay.
I already asked. I already tried. Trust me.
She already tried to get one.
I had to. That sounds really good. I had to ask.
But you're not the only one. Trust me.
Trust me. You're not the only one. But anyone out there, you can get a copy of the book. That simple. If you don't win our contest, you can go out on September 19th and pick up your own copy. And I believe there's some sort of signed autograph thing with them as well at what, Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, so right now, guys, Second Nature is available for pre-order, okay? It's available for pre-order at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, BAM Books, Indie Book, wherever books are sold. But if you pre-order the book through Barnes & Noble or through BAM Books, you get a special signed copy by the Nature Boy and by Charlotte. So I'm including that because, you know, there are some people who really want that extra level of keepsake for this very special dual memoir. And the release date is right around the corner. Second Nature comes out September 19th.
And it's that simple. Tell people how they can follow you on the social media.
Yes, thank you for specifying social media, especially after we talked about the stalker in the book.
Afterwards, we'll give out his home address, his phone number, and everything. You can go out and you can
perfect.
Stalk his
book. guys, it's always great connecting with members of your audience over the years. They can connect with me on Twitter, Instagram, and my Facebook page. It's at It's Brian Shields, all one word, ITSBRIANSHIELDS.
That's simple. Follow man, like him on the Facebook, follow him on the Twitter, the Instagrams, but most importantly, get the book. Second Nature, available September 19th everywhere.
And well, I think that does it for us. What do you think?
I think that does it for us as well. Big thanks to Brian Shields for coming on. Remember, get the book. We just mentioned Second Nature, available September 19th at bookstores everywhere. But yeah, that's it for The Rack. Saturday night, midnight is. It's another edition of CB Radio. The weird, the wacky, the unusual. Go back and listen to CB Radio 500. And, well, I guess I should announce it. No, y'all just gonna have to wait till Saturday for what we're doing.
not going to spoil what we're doing for the Greater Than Great Debate.
It's special.
She knows it's special. Tune in Saturday night for the Greater Than Great Debate, only on SeatGreater, SeatGreater Live on Facebook, Twitter, and .com. Sunday night, Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern, if all things go to plan. We're going to have something fun, and Lindsay will be there as well at WTR Sunday night on the Facebook and the Twitter. Monday nights, Raw Post Show, 11:10 p.m. Eastern. Tuesday nights, twitch.tv/rackradioshow, 11:15 p.m. Eastern, or WTR Sims. We're winding down Season 1 because WWE 2K18 is coming out really soon, which means Season 2 of WTR Sims is coming your way. So subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/rackradioshow. Check out the Rack Extra Total Bells Season 2, Episode 2, now available. Make sure you like us on Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Like us, subscribe, favorite, follow us on the Instagram at Rack Radio Show. It's all there. Just search it at Rack Radio Show, at Wild Talk Radio, facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network.
You can follow me on Twitter at Linsboard, LNSWRD. You can go to my website, psychworkdesigns.com. If you like my artwork, if you'd like to view my artwork, it is available for your viewing pleasure at behance.net/Linsboard, same as the Twitters. And don't forget to check out our very fine sponsors, Wrestling Figure Photography, instagram.com/MBG1211. Gerwick.net, and fightboot.com. So for Rock, for Brian Shields, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, and we will see you next week. Bye!
WildTalkRadio.com.